Welcome, everybody, to your Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by nobody. As like I did last week, today is going to be part two of the mailbag. I split those questions up into two parts, and I am going to, you know, it allows me to spend a little bit more time without having to feel like I have to rush at the very end of each show. And then also I get to, you know, compile all these questions that you have for Pete and I, and there are still a couple more that were asked that Pete and I can get to individually as well. And it allows me to stay a little bit more organized, especially as we head into the last vestiges of the season. And you know, this is wild, but this is the last Locked On Lakers podcast of this Lakers season. The next time you guys hear from me, it will be after Tuesday night's game. It'll be after Pete and I get together and talk about the game itself. We'll probably look back on the season that was and all of that stuff. So this is kind of crazy. As with all these questions, if you send them into iTunes in the form of a 5-star review, I will get to them. I will answer them. If you get there and you put your question down in the form of a 5-star review and make note that it's for Pete and I, then I will leave that question for Pete and I. And then, you know, I said earlier in the year that we are going to make sure to find a way for those of you who are Android users or don't use iTunes to get your questions in as well. We have a couple ideas. Pete and I are actually getting together at some point over the next couple weeks to just throw ideas back and forth at each other at ways in which the show can continue to grow and we can continue to make it a better show for you. So we're really excited about the direction that the show is going in, even if we're a little apprehensive about the direction that the Lakers are going in. So without any further ado, though, I am going to answer your guys' questions. And look, I'll do this for you. I teased on my Twitter feed, at Anthony Irwin LA, that I have an article coming tomorrow that is going to annoy quite a few people. I'll give you a tease because you guys listen to the show. It's not that I want Luke Walton back. It's not that I think he deserves to be back next year. My article tomorrow is making the case for why Lakers fans shouldn't be shocked. You know, shocked meaning like, what the hell? Where did that come from if Luke Walton is retained? So I make the case for that. It's not that I believe that it's necessarily going to happen. I would be surprised, right? Surprised, though, is not quite the same thing as shocked. So there's your tease. It'll be dropping early Tuesday morning. And you know, I liked how it turned out. So we'll see what you guys think about that. Let's get to your guys' questions, though. First question comes from QBreezy12. I've heard you say that you think Golden State is one of the most unlikable teams ever. What are your reasons? Also, are the Lakers going to use their max slot on Caruso? Fortunately for the Lakers, they don't have to. He's a restricted free agent, and fortunately, I don't think any team is going to be maxing him out. But you know what's cool is that if they retain Alex Caruso at a decent rate and then they sign another max guy, that's essentially like walking away with seven max guys, right? I think I'm doing that math correct. As far as Golden State, you hear all the time about teams being more than being in together. They are more than the individual parts, right? I think that's how Golden State is as a unit of unlikability. So I think Steph by himself is likable-ish enough, right? I think Draymond Green by himself is likable-ish enough, though, you know, less so. I think Kevin Durant comes from an interesting story and I think would be a lot more likable if he wasn't in Golden State and didn't very obviously regret making that decision. Klay Thompson's just like outright likable, so he doesn't quite fit into this. But those guys all come together And they kind of highlight each other's shortcomings in terms of just likability. And then the other thing, too, is like one thing nobody likes is the rich kid who acts as if, you know, the rich kid who inherited their job from their parent. All of their money comes from a parent. And they try to walk around as if they did, you know, they were born on third base and are strutting their way back to home plate or down to home plate, right? Nobody likes that person, right? Nobody likes that guy. And I think Golden State gives off a lot of that vibe where they try to act as if, you know, they were light years ahead of everybody, right? There was that famous Joe Lacob quote that they were light years ahead of everybody. But in reality, they got lucky that they signed Steph Curry when they did, and his ankles were still made of paper mache. They got kind of lucky that they took a chance on Draymond Green and he panned out the way that he did. They got lucky that the cap spiked when it did, and they were able to add Kevin Durant to a 73-win team, right? And the fact that they don't acknowledge that luck and act as if it was just them and only them who are succeeding because of their own greatness, it just gives off an ugly vibe. I'm not particularly thrilled with that vibe. So I'm going to take a quick second here, answer your guys' questions, and when we come back, we have a few fun ones to get to. I enjoy the fun questions, so we're going to come back and answer a fun question here in a second. And we're back. I have a ton of questions to get to, so I'm going to go right into it. Assess the Threat says, or writes, "Hey, Anthony, I'm going to try to ask at least one fun/serious question or less serious question every week, especially going into the offseason. We'll obviously have less to talk about in general. I know you're a big baseball fan as well. I really am not, so I'm quite out of my element here. What NBA player, past or present, do you think would be an MLB All-Star or whatever the term is, and vice versa? I'd be interested in hearing Pete's answer as well, if he's into baseball. Cheers, ATT." He is into baseball. He's a Yankees fan, though, so I'm not going to give him the platform. No, I'll run it by him, I promise. In terms of players, so I'm just going to roll off of body type. Basketball players tend to be a little too tall to be baseball players, even point guards, right? Like, it was funny. I went from covering the Lakers, and then I spent about 6 months or so covering the Dodgers when I ran Dodgers Nation. And during that time, I went in and covered Spring League and got into the clubhouse and obviously spoke to players and stuff. And it really struck me in talking to those players that, like, you guys are normal human being size, you know. Basketball players, it's hard to, you never see eye to eye with a player. It just almost never happens. So I was out there covering Spring League and, you know, you're talking to Puig who, you know, who is, you see him on TV and he just kind of bounces off of the screen because, you know, he's got those huge shoulders. He's got those huge thighs. He just looks larger than life, especially when he's taking on all of the Pittsburgh Pirates. But, you know, you're sitting there talking to him and you realize, like, I might actually be a little taller. You know, we were at least eye to eye. And that was when he was wearing cleats. I think when I saw him walk by one time and he was wearing regular shoes, I was a good inch or two taller. So that was kind of odd. But the point here being, the basketball player, you know, if you're hoping to hit, you don't want to have a basketball player's strike zone, right? That's, you know, Yao Ming would have a strike zone that you could fit Isaiah Thomas into. But if you have, you know, if you're a pitcher, you could get away with that kind of thing. Remember, Randy Johnson was almost like 6'10", 6'11", or something like that. And he was crazy intimidating up on the mound. He had those long arms, and he threw sidearm. And it looked, for left-handed batters, as if the ball was starting on the outside of their front shoulder, right? There's a famous video of John Kruk during an All-Star game, like falling backwards, just kind of waving and saying, yep, you won this one. And Randy Johnson went on his way as well. So if you're a pitcher, then I think you can get away with having, you know, a lengthy kind of guy. A basketball player's hands would be really good here too, because you can grip so much of the ball and of the laces for breaking pitches. So any of those, like on the Lakers team in particular, I think Ingram would be interesting as a pitcher, right? I think Rondo would be interesting as like a shortstop third baseman. Again, he's like 6'1", right? He's at least 6 foot. So that kind of limits him to the bigger kind of positions. Raymond Felton would be a tremendous catcher. just like the guy in Angels in the Outfield who was sitting there eating like hot dogs and ice cream in the dugout. Like that, Raymond Felton would be an athlete heaven there. But and then, you know, vice versa, it's hard to find baseball players who are big enough to be able to compete. And you know, you're talking about the tallest positional players who actually get to bat. They're maybe about 6'3" or so, and how many of them are actually athletic enough to actually play? The Dodger who comes to mind maybe here is Cody Bellinger. He's crazy fast. He has great hand-eye coordination. And you know, you never know about lateral movement, though, you know, at first base, if you're going to stop those line drives and hard ground balls coming up the line, you have to be able to move pretty quickly laterally. So I think Bellinger of all of the Dodgers, easily among the Dodgers and across baseball, guys like that have a chance at actually competing or not competing in the NBA, but they might be as good at basketball as the typical NBA player is good at baseball. So it's an interesting one, though. I like those cross sport kind of things where, you know, like Bo Jackson obviously is the example, and Deion Sanders are the examples that everybody points to as, you know, great football players who went and were at least decent at baseball. At least you got to be really good to make it all the way up to the pros. Just ask Michael Jordan. I believe Brian Jordan also played for the Cardinals, either the Arizona football Cardinals, and then he went also to play for the Atlanta Braves back in the day. But you don't see, I mean, it's tough because you literally will never see it because the NBA and baseball seasons coincide. But it's still a fun hypothetical. The two sports just don't have very much in common. It's not like, you know, basketball and soccer, those sports have a ton in common where, like, I could see Allen Iverson going and just wrecking fools. Prime Allen Iverson would just go and wreck fools in soccer just with his lateral quickness and shiftiness and I like his attitude about in soccer. A lot of people think, you know, soccer is soft and they flop a bunch and stuff. But if you've ever, I played soccer growing up as well. And if you've ever had somebody knock you off the ball when you really had to hold it, that collision doesn't feel all that great. Or when you're on a breakaway, or you're coming from the weak side and you're coming for a cross, or the ball is at your feet and some sweeper comes over and just wrecks you just outside the box to make sure you don't get in. Those collisions don't feel all that great, and you're not wearing hardly any protection there. You can't really wear a cup. Your cleats don't go above your ankles. You're wearing shin guards, but nobody wants to wear the big bulky ones because you look like a doofus. So it was just that some of those collisions didn't feel all that great. And I think Iverson would have been able to hold up in those things. Kobe, obviously, Steve Nash, those guys were great soccer players. And the concept of soccer and off-ball movement and non-verbal communication out there on the field or the court, those things are really interesting. So great question. Let's get one more question here before we get into the break. Question here from MG's Raiders. Anthony, why do you dislike Kobe? What did he do to upset you? I'm a Lakers fan first, not a Kobe stan. Love the pod, bro. Thanks, Mario A. Goodman. I don't hate Kobe. Now, there's the off-court stuff that I'm just not going to get into here. It's way more complicated than everybody makes it, and it's not worth it to get into it in 5 minutes worth of a podcast. But in terms of as a player, He's, as a player, Prime Kobe might be one of my favorite players of all time. He's crazy skilled. I don't know very many basketball players in the history of the game. I think there's only about five of them, right, that were asked to be among the league scoring leaders and also the team's primary perimeter defender. Like, that doesn't happen very often anymore. And so, you know, like, Paul George is like one of a few examples in the league right now. But so I really liked that prime Kobe. I just wasn't thrilled with how, and I'm not thrilled currently with how he is perceived or was perceived at the end of his career. Like, look, the farewell tour was fun. It ended well. That 60-point game is going to always go down as one of my favorite all-time sports memories. That's an objective take. There is nobody who walked away from that 60-point game and said to themselves, oh, he shot too much, right? Nobody who is worth listening to talk, nobody worth listening to walked away from that game saying that, right? 81 points is just, it's outrageous. And you know, there he probably could have had, when he scored 62 through three quarters, he probably could have met or matched that 81-point game in that one too. So, crazy good basketball player. I just don't like the mythologizing, I think that's it, of Kobe, the mama mentality stuff, the idea that everything that a young Laker does has to be compared directly to Kobe, the idea that Rob Pelinka only has his job because he was Kobe's agent. Like, those things just kind of annoy me. The last contract that Kobe had just kind of annoyed me. And the blowback you get anytime you dare not bow at the altar of Kobe, it's just kind of off-putting. So I hope that answers it. There's this idea out there that I hate the guy, and I really don't. He's one of my favorite players of all time. We're going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to keep on answering your guys' questions. All right, three questions to go here. First question comes from Dano_Laker. Great job, guys. I agree with your assertions about Majinka and that have blind spots in evaluating talent, especially undervaluing young developing players and overvaluing outdated skill sets of some veteran players. Could part of the solution be in-house in elevating the roles of Jesse Buss, Ryan West, and Bill Burka? Bill Burka is like older than everybody that we're talking about here. Can you imagine those three? Could you imagine those three? Magic could focus on the big fish and Pelinka on the salary cap. I don't know how much Pelinka actually knows about the salary cap, to be completely honest. Like, somebody who actually understands how the salary cap works would not have felt the need to trade Ivica Zubac to get rid of Michael Beasley's contract. Like, that's not somebody, that's no capologist is sitting there saying, oh, we can't pay Ivica Zubac come this summer. His cap hold is going to be so immense. And that's not how this works. I'm no capologist. I am nowhere near as smart on this stuff as the Eric Pincuses, even the Alex Reglas, the Christian Svivases, who I also get to work with at Silver Screen and Roll. I don't know these things as well as those guys do. And even I was like, what the hell is going on, right? And you know, the idea that the Lakers could somehow not withstand the immense burden of a $1.5 million cap hold that they could just renounce come the summer. Like, if you're telling me that Pelinka is the cap guy, which we have been told before, then he needs to be fired. He screwed up the cap. Anywho. I don't think that so just to summarize the question here, the idea of, again, promoting from within, that's what keeps getting the Lakers into trouble here. Jesse Buss eventually is going to get promoted. He's a Buss sibling. He's going to eventually, I would imagine, take over Jim Buss's role. Like, that's what he's destined for once he's ready for it. Ryan West, at that point, would probably be the GM. I think that's how that's actually going to work. But if we're actually going to broaden the Lakers' collective minds in-house, they're going to have to do some hiring outside the Laker family. And, you know, whether that's David Griffin, whether that's, who knows, right? Sam Hinkie, Like, the fact that I mention these names and feel like, nope, there's no chance whatsoever that that'll ever happen. Like, that probably doesn't speak to how well the Lakers have managed this concept of broadening their scope through outside hires. And so long as they continue to do that, they're closing themselves off to the very idea of getting smarter through addition, right? Everybody wants to think that they're the smartest person in the room, right? Everybody wants to think that what they have to say is in some way, shape, or form unique. In some cases, that is the case, right? In some cases, those people are just that gifted that it doesn't matter what room they step into, they are the leading voice. They are, anytime they speak, it's going to quiet the room. That was Dr. Jerry West. There are a ton of stories of when the owners would meet and he would just kind of sit there in his corner. And then when he had something to say, he would say it and everybody shut the hell up while Dr. Buss was talking, right? And I think everybody wants to perceive themselves that way, but very few people actually live up to the billing. I think the Lakers have quite a few people in the organization who think of themselves that way, and in some cases will go so far as to make the room dumber to make it stay that way. And if that's what the Lakers are doing here, if that's, you know, if I get that vibe, I think, from Magic Johnson sometimes. And even Rob Pelinka, I think, thinks he's way smarter than he actually is. Not to say that I'm definitely smarter than those guys. That's not what I'm saying here. I'm just saying that you're talking about the heads of a multi-billion dollar industry that are competing directly against each other. So you have to have some of the foremost minds running your organization if you're hoping to keep up with those people. And if it's one thing for somebody to maybe not be as smart as a Daryl Morey, or even, you know, for somebody to be not as smart as Magic Johnson if they're trying to compete with Magic Johnson. But if that person who isn't as smart as their competitors limits the amount of intelligence that they surround themselves with, that's where the real problems line up. And for the Lakers, for a really long time, they have stepped into a room and haven't been the smartest person, the smartest organization out there. And in order to make themselves feel as if they actually are that smart, they've just continued with sycophants and yes men who make them feel the way that they want to feel. And they got to stop that. Next question here comes from I Like Burritos. Me too. That's a run for president on that platform. I'll vote for you. Please rank these players as NBA players you'd want on your team, assuming all salaries are the same. 1, Mo Wagner. 2, Ivica Zubats. 3, Thomas Bryant. 4, Jonathan Williams. 5, Isaac Bonga. 6, Alex Caruso. I think I go Zubats, Bryant, Williams, Wagner. No, I take that back. So I go Zubats, Caruso, Bryant, Williams, Wagner, Bonga. I hope I didn't miss anybody there. None of them are sure things at this point. They all have holes in their game. Though, you know, I think there's quite a bit of growth that you can hope for with all of them, or at least like in Alex Caruso's case, he might not grow very much more as a player, but he's a lot more than we initially thought, obviously, when he first entered the league. And you know what, man, like even if it isn't with the Lakers, and I really hope it is with the Lakers, but I'm pulling like hell for Alex Caruso. He deserves to have had a chance before this right now. Before the season or the end of the season that he's had over the last couple weeks. And I'm really hoping that he's able to turn this stretch of legitimately really good point guard play into something with a little bit more stability moving forward. Last question here comes from Planet Mule. The April 3rd podcast was truly enlightening as it highlighted the shortcomings in the front office and Genie's dependency on familiarity, not talent or hard work. My biggest disappointment is the front office's failure to build a truly premier infrastructure. Contrast the Dodgers, who have multiple great talents in the world and staffing and coaching at every level. In the past 3 years, the Dodgers lost an assistant GM to Atlanta, Anthropoulos. Alex Anthropoulos is the person you're talking about there. Farm manager to Philly. Manager, I'm forgetting his name. He's kind of a nightmare, though, the person that you're talking about there, from what I've heard. Another GM, Farhan Zaidi, to San Francisco. And the Lakers are run like a mom-and-pop business. They have a part-time president, Magic, and an inexperienced buddy as a GM. I don't really see a question there, but I will say this. Compare the Lakers to the Dodgers. How many people from the Lakers organization who Ryan West, I think, is a little questionable on this front, because a lot of people just think, oh, he's Jerry's son, right? Maybe he is as good as he's billed to be. Maybe he is truly the wunderkind that is the next up and coming executive. He very well might be. He and Jesse Buss have done a ton of work and been really, really productive as scouts and as evaluators of talent for the Lakers. So we'll see there. But how many people working for the Lakers over the last non-players? How many people working for the Lakers over the last 10 years or so have been the hot commodity as an executive, as a coach, as anything, right? There are very few examples of that. If anything, now the Lakers landed Luke Walton, he was the hot commodity, but he has since seen his value diminish. When he leaves the Lakers this year, nobody's going to be writing him in or penciling him in as the must-add coach to any organization this year, right? Mitch Kupchak was hired by Carolina, but I think a lot of that has to do with his Carolina University, UNC ties back to Michael Jordan, right? And even then, it took him a couple years to get hired. There hasn't been anybody in the same way that we saw with the Dodgers that other teams have looked at the Lakers and said, we got to poach that guy. And until the Lakers get back to a point where people look at the Lakers as such an organization that you have to try to poach whatever talent you possibly can, we're going to continue to see a few of these holes, these cracks in the foundation that can erode when pressure is applied. So we'll see. We'll see how these things go. This was a lot of fun. Thank you to everybody who sent in questions. Again, final reminder, if you guys have a question or a subject that you really want covered on the show, it could be anything, leave it in the form of a 5-star iTunes review, and I promise either I or Pete or both of us will get to it. Shouts to Himalaya. Shouts to all of our sponsors who keep our lights on. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.